Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth...
Hey, Big C here, doing a little practicing for the Hunterdon County Chamber's 16th Annual Golf Classic.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So my apologies, a button or two were pressed in error there, but I finally got the right one. I'm looking at our accurate weather forecast. It says it is 73 degrees right now in scenic downtown Flemington, and it's overcast with a little bit of drizzle. Now, this beats 103 degrees, which is what we had over the weekend or thereabouts. So, yeah, it's still hot and muggy, but it's really a cool-off wave versus what we had over the weekend. Let me tell you what the next few days have in stock. It looks like today we're going to peak at 73, go down to 61 overnight. Tomorrow's going to be on a sunny side, 10% chance of rain, 82 during a wet day, 61 overnight. Thursday, 84 during the day, sunny all day, 10% chance of rain, 61 overnight. Friday, 86 during the day, sunny all day, 60. It sounds like Groundhog Day here, isn't it? So it looks like we're going to be in the mid-80s during the day with sun for the rest of the week, and we're going to be in the mid-60s overnight. And we have no more rain in stock until after Saturday, which as far as I can see. Looks like Sunday's clear. Looks like Monday starts to cloud up and gets up into the 90s again. So we're going to play a few more of our sponsored commercials, and I'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de familia a familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-8255 3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So, hey, it's Joe Peters, and we're doing Real Estate Matters. Today is the 23rd of July. It is about 4.09 p.m., and I'm sitting in Flemington, New Jersey, on the 23rd of July, 2019, talking to you about some of the things we're starting to see or are seeing on an ongoing basis in real estate. First things first, our market changed a little since the first of the month. We no longer can get children back in school, and as a result, we're now not selling real estate to people who can get their children in school by the end of the summer, but we're more selling real estate to people who are not looking to get their children in school by end of summer. Although I got to admit, there's still a rush or two going on, but the main rush is over. This happens every year. It takes about 8 weeks to close, and if you close after July 1st, roughly, it's really tight to get your child in school. Secondly, the market remains vibrant. Our interest rates are extremely low, somewhere under 3.5%. It is rumored that we're going to see a Fed rate hike in order to adjust for what's going on in our trade differential before the end of the month. And if that trade, the Fed rate drop happens, I think I might have said hike, but it's going to be a drop, we think a 0.5%, it's going to accelerate interest rates even better. We could see interest nearer to 3%. So as a buyer, it couldn't be a better time to be in the real estate market. The other thing that's happening is we are continuously seeing inventory come on. Every morning, another 20, 30 listings, we're continuously selling inventory. But it's creeped up on us. It's in better shape. We need really three things to happen at the beginning of the year in order for us to have a good year in real estate. One was we needed inventory. We're seeing that. Two was we needed interest rates to drop. We're seeing that. Even further than we ever believed. Would you believe we're at 4.9% the first of the year, and it's now 3.5 or less, going towards 3? And then the third thing was we needed jobs. And I'm going to talk to you a little about jobs. New Jersey is hitting a 3.5% unemployment rate. I'm not saying we're doing anything right. I'm thinking we're doing some things okay. But I think we're rising with the tide. They say all boats rise with the tide, and the tide of national employment is doing really well. We creep from 3.6 to 3.7 on a national basis for the last month, but New Jersey dropped to 3.5, one of the best numbers we've ever seen. And the jobs that we're putting on are paying more than we were paying last year by about 3.5%. The reason for that is we have no people left at the lower end where we're typically paying minimum wage. And as a result, we're paying better than minimum wage in many, many of our establishments. You get a job as a front-end cashier or as a stock boy or as a waitress. Well, waiters and waitresses get different pay scales. But in a retail store, you're going to probably start near $15, if not at $15 an hour. So the argument about we need to raise the minimum wage to $15 is a moot point here in New Jersey because of the fact that we're doing so well, that we have so few unemployed, and that we're really out of people. And it's going to exacerbate itself before the end of the month as people start going back to school because these are typical lower-end workers just trying to make a few bucks so they got money in their pocket when they go to high school or college. We're out of people. Push a door open, any retail establishment in Hunterdon or Somerset County, and what do you see on that door? Help wanted! I mean, we have an unwritten rule that when we go out to dinner and it says help wanted on a front door, we probably go to somewhere else because we don't want to be waited on by novices or lack of people. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's just something that we do. We're trying as a county to get better established, and I think we're doing a good job of it. We're creating jobs like everybody else. Huntington County is pretty much an environment where there's not a lot of high-paying jobs, but there's a lot of decent-paying jobs. I mean, if you look at our top three industries in Huntington County, number one is the hospital, number two is the school system, and number three is the auto dealers. And those three really pay competitive wages. And what happens? Well, the people from New Pennsylvania come to New Jersey because the Pennsylvania minimum wage, like in a lot of states, is still at about 7.25. Our minimum wage is close to $10, but we're paying more than that. So people are coming over here, and it is a windfall for them because it's more money than they can make in Pennsylvania. So they're commuting 15, 20 miles, getting into New Jersey, getting into the Flemington to Clinton corridor, and working here, and a lot in those industries, a lot in the retail and restaurant industry, hotel industry. Now, what's happening with the people in Huntington County? They're going further to the east because Huntington County is a great place to live, but there's not a lot of high-paying jobs in Huntington County. We're working on it. Mark Salek is doing a fine job with things like Hack 100 and whatever, but it's coming along. We're bringing some companies in, like we've brought into the old Exxon plant, and in effect, it's improving, but we're still finding a lot of cases. We've got to get in the car and drive east, too, in order to find a better wage scale. Some people go all the way to New York. And I got to tell you, the ones that go all the way to New York don't stay in Huntington County very long. They start thinking, maybe I should live closer to New York. I'm spending a lot of time commuting, and that isn't making sense to me. And then secondly, the millennials or the 25 to 35-year-old working class want to be more of an urban society where they can walk to the pub, walk to the restaurant, get a Starbucks, walk from the train to the home. And you tell me how many towns in Huntington County, and Somerset for that matter, that we have that you can do that in. So we're seeing this natural migration to the east for work and returning home at night. We call it traffic. It's been there forever, but what's happened is during the 80s and 90s and into about the mid-2000s, 2005, we saw this migration to the west where people said, hey, you know what? I could live in Huntington County. It's a beautiful place to live. There's a very low crime rate. There's a very good quality of life factor. We've got everything we need, great hospitals, great schools, great public service. And I could still drive or take the bus or take the train into where I need to go to work. Somewhere between 2005 and 2015, that all changed. And they're calling it the receding perimeter of westward migration. And in effect, people stopped moving so far because the jobs sort of receded. We're not seeing as many jobs where you can work and commute or telecommute, although I think that's going to come back and is starting to see some of it. But as a result, the tide sort of pulled back towards New York City. And over that 10-year period, 2005 to 2015, we got to sort of about 287 and stopped, where before we got to about Route 31, which is a number of 15 to 20 miles. So now we're seeing people getting into the Bridgewater area, and that's about as far as they want to go. And quite honestly, I get into a lot of conversations with people in my office. I cover both Hunterdon and Somerset, and I do work out of the Warren office, although I don't get there that frequently. They're saying it's really not even going as far as 287 anymore. It's going as far as good train service goes. And that may be into the towns like Gillette, maybe not even as far out as Somerset County, 15 to 20 miles from New York, 15 to 20 minutes from New York mass transportation, half hour at the most. People are valuing their time. And people are saying, look, I can be just about anywhere, but it serves me no purpose in order to commute all the way out to Hunterdon County and then have to come all the way back to work each morning. So that's what's happening. Now, what makes that change? I think the future, self-driving vehicles combined with automation, so that we can put sort of a gadget on a self-driving vehicle so it can't bump into another self-driving vehicle, and set up high occupancy self-driving vehicle lanes and drive them through 5G automation at high speeds. And maybe they're not cars, maybe they're buses or tandem buses where we can fit 80 or 100 people on a bus, and can people from downtown New York out to Hunterdon County in 20 minutes nonstop, then the problem reverses itself. So it's not happened yet. It's still receding a little. But talking to Mark, he's saying we're starting to see millennials coming back into Hunterdon County. We're definitely seeing parents between their first and second child moving to Hunterdon County. And what they're looking for is a better quality of life. It's the exact same reason Marilyn and I came out here 20 years ago. We first parked in Clinton Township. We're still there. Made a brief soiree into the Tewksbury area, but we're in Clinton, and we've never looked back. It's a great place to live. It's not a cheap place to live. Taxes are high. Real estate values are high. We've got great school system, we've got great police, we've got great retail, we've got great restaurants. We've got everything we need here with one exception, and that is good-paying jobs. So people still go to the east, and they still come back to the west at night. Now, Marilyn just drove for 20 years over to Rutgers in New Brunswick, and it was a 45-minute drive at best, sometimes an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And she hated to drive, but she loved it when she got back home. She felt she was driving into heaven each night. That's a nice thing to say. That paints a nice picture, and that's Hunterdon County. It's your little slice of heaven. So this week we're going to talk about a bunch of different little things that are popping up in real estate. And next week I've got Al War coming back on. I'm waiting for him to confirm. And Al is going to talk with us about what he sees happening in Hunterdon County and some of the positive things. We had him on about 4 weeks ago. We got a little off on tangents, interesting tangents, of how to bring the county back as to a place where people want to move into. But right now, we're losing probably 1.5% of people due to attrition, people when the children all go off to college. Sometimes they downsize, and sometimes they're downsizing to be near to where the children and the grandchildren are, which isn't necessarily Hunterdon County. Sometimes they're just saying, I don't need this great big house anymore, and I'm looking for multi-floor luxury living. And we don't have a lot of that in Hunterdon County, although there's some being built. And sometimes they're looking for 55-plus. And when they look for 55-plus, they look for 55-plus in the 300 to 400 range. And I got to tell you, we have barely any of that. We're building 55-pluses, but we're building more of the 500 to 600 range. And it's more than people in that range bracket want to spend. So we're losing people, natural attrition, 1.5%. And then the year before last, the birth rate in Hunterdon County dropped below the death rate. And as a result, we've got more people dying than getting born. And we're starting to lose people from the natural population replenishment factor happening. We're having fewer children, having children later in life. People at the childbearing age have much more choices available to them, and it's very expensive to have children. Put a child in daycare, and you're talking $22,000 on the average. So you have to earn $30,000 in order to pay $22,000. And when you have your second child, you then have to pay $60,000 in order to pay the two of them. And you're probably going to say, this isn't worth it, and the mother stays home or stays put. Maybe get somebody to watch the children a couple hours a week and works locally. So all of those problems are here. They've been here for a long time. Are they getting worse or better? I think they're getting a little bit more challenging. But I think at the same time, what you can do today is a little bit more challenging as far as good news. Our technology, I see people working over their telephone, having a conference call of six or eight people's little faces on the front of their phone showing up, and we're doing things like inspecting a house or looking at real estate. I have people going online and looking at things rather than driving out to the house. And I see people doing a lot of new things that I think, in effect, are good news. And I think through these new inventions, and you're going to take two or three and cobble them together, which is what Al and I got to talking about, like self-driving vehicles, which we're starting to see, coupled with 5G communications. If you don't know what 5G is, go on YouTube and take a 10-minute course on 5G. 5G is the next level of communications. We have 4G now in most places in New Jersey. Some states still haven't got the 4G. And when we go from 4G, which is pretty fast, to 5G, we will go 150 to 200 times faster than we're going today. So what that means is that latency delay, where you see two people on the TV talking to each other and the second one doesn't hear the first one for about 30 seconds, that's because it's going up to the satellite and coming back down. That's called latency delay. This communications medium will make latency delay all but disappear, where we can be online real-time 100% of the time when you have 5G service. It's going to be a tremendous innovation, and we're seeing people say, and this is a differentiator as well, I won't live where I can't get that kind of service in the future. We're seeing businesses say, I won't open a business where I don't have that service because going into the future. So it's something that's coming naturally. It's something that I think we will see available on our telephone. I use a Galaxy, but iPhones are the same way. So whether you use a Galaxy, which is, I'm trying to think of the name of the brand, Android phone, or if you use an iPhone, and probably 70% of the people in the world are in Androids and 30% on iPhones, although iPhones are very, very popular in our area because it just works. You pick it up, it works. The guy next to you, or gal next to you, has one just like it, and she or he can show you what you don't know. Where the world of Galaxy and Android is a little more complex, a little more of an engineering mindset, but you can do so much more with it. These phones already have 5G on them in some cases. It costs a little bit more when you buy the phone, but the service, I think, is going to be $10 a month extra. And where it's available, it'll pop up. And when it doesn't, it's like the bars. It'll drop down to 4G or 3G if you go into Pennsylvania or to the west where it's not available yet. So those are some of the things I think that we're going to see will change what we do and where we're at, and hopefully bring more common sense and demand to living back in Hunterdon County. So I'm not going anywhere. Been here 20 years, love it. And we're thinking that it's not so bad. We're seeing a little bit of stress on higher-priced inventory. I think I'm exaggerating. There's a lot of stress on high-priced inventory. Our 0 to 500K mark, so houses under 500,000, that compromises about 80% of our business. And that 80% of our business, if it's clean inventory, is selling almost the day it comes on because we don't have enough inventory. You get between 5 and 6, and that's where our transfer-ins, transfer-outs typically are. And those are the Center Hall Colonials sitting on 2 to 3 acres with 2 to 3 car garage, depending what year they were built, selling in 500 to 600K. We have a lot of them. One of the reasons we have a lot of them is that a lot came on last year, which was good news. But you could have a natural 550,000 valued house, and you could be up against one that used to be 700 and they couldn't sell it, and it went through the 600s and is now at $50,000 more than yours at 600K, and it's twice the house. And a lot of people will jump to a larger house, even though they don't need it, and it's an ongoing large expense. So let's talk about a few things. Let's talk about New Jersey unemployment drops to 3.5%, and a historic monthly low. By the way, my name once again, I'll play my commercial at the end, is Joe Peters. You can reach me at 908-238-0118. I do not take call-ins while I'm on the air. But if you go to jpeters.com and on the top bar, it will say blog, and you go to the blog, you can pick up my newsletter, which covers all of these items that I'm reading from you are out on my blog or in my newsletter. So this one was reposted from New Jersey Biz, and New Jersey unemployment rate fell to a historic monthly low in June to 3.5%, lower than any month rate since U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics began state-level records in 1976. Can you believe they didn't take records before 76? I can't. On a national unemployment, is 3.7, was 3.6, it nudged up a little. It's sort of ironic that we put in May we had a low job gain and it went down, and in July we had a higher job gain and it went up. Major private industry sectors, 8 realized gains. Professional and business services saw employment increase of 3,000 trade jobs in New Jersey. Trade transportation, 2,600. Manufacturing saw 1,000. Both information, education, and health services got 800 each. And we saw an increase of 700. And the only area that suffered a little was the financial sector. So we're saying 7 out of 8 went up. Employment in New Jersey rose 47,000 year over year from 2018 to 2019. That's almost surpassed what we did in 2018. Since the low point of the recession, New Jersey's private sector employees have added 410,000 jobs. That's all good news. The jobs are coming back. And people say, yeah, but they're all minimum wage. Well, some of them are, but most of them aren't. And even the minimum wage jobs are paying more than they used to, and these people can afford to buy what we're marketing in the area. Enthusiasm about the drop in the state's unemployment rate must be tempered by concern about the continued stagnation of our workforce size, which remains below 2008 levels. Garden State Initiative President Regina Egha, E-G-E-A, I don't know how to pronounce that, job growth in most sectors, encouraging side for our economy, but the financial activity sector has been flat for 2 months, and New Jersey has led the nation in job losses and remains a cause for concern. So that's what's happening. The why it's happening is people aren't working here anymore. People are going to New York to fill the jobs. This happened when I was a millennial, or whatever we called ourselves at that age, when I was that age. They paid more money in New York. I got a train, went to New York. For 23 years, I traveled from New York and home, New York and home. I got on a train somewhere around daylight and got home somewhere around sunset every day for 23 years. We added up those hours, and I could have got my doctorate degree in the time I spent on the train. The other thing is we're seeing industry, and we're seeing higher end residents leave New Jersey. We had $5,700 million earners leave New Jersey in 2018. And we're seeing some migration of industry, although I think the industry has stopped. I think the fact that New Jersey is an expensive place to live stops some people from moving here, but at the same time is getting better. To the extent that we're paying more here than we used to. There's more jobs than there used to be here, and it's not as big as an issue as it once was. So let's look at the difference a year makes to sellers. This is an interesting article. Over the last few years, many sellers have been hesitant to put their houses on the market because they feared not being able to find another home to buy. Remember, I said we added a lot of houses. So that's changed. We've reported on inventory shortages in the past, and it's been a constant concern for potential buyers throughout the recent years. New research shows the inventory concern is starting to decrease amongst potential buyers. According to the First American, two leading obstacles for home ownership that buyers feel today are affordability and limited inventory. This means the feeling that homes are less affordable has risen and that the limited inventory has decreased, delivering a wealth of good news for sellers. So we're looking that the affordable ability index has from 2019 affordability is 40%, and in 2008 it was 30%. So affordability has improved almost one third. And then when we look at the unsold inventory in 2019, we're looking at a 30% versus 35%. So over the last 12 months, a steady growth and month-over-month increase in the number of homes coming on the market to purchase. In the past, the lack of listings and available inventory slowed down the real estate market. This recent increase in the current inventory has many buyers and sellers now thinking it's time to move up, and rightfully so. For the last 2 months, we've seen over 4 months of inventory become available for sale, a promising number that's slowly decreasing this year and creating more buying opportunities. So let's talk about months of inventory and what it is. If you have 10 houses for sale and you sold two, you have 5 months worth of inventory. That doesn't mean they closed. That just means in the last 30 days for the month that we're measuring, they went under contract. So you've got 10 houses for sale, two have sold, you've got 5 months worth of inventory. 4 to 6 is natural. That means rainbows are out, birds and butterflies are out. You might even be seeing a unicorn or two. Things are where we hope they would be. Then, when we get above 6 months worth of inventory, so let's take, we got 10 houses for sale and only one sells. Now we have 10 months worth of inventory. That means there's pressure on that price point. And that price point could be within a town or a county or even just a development. Or, and that makes it a buyer's market because the prices are coming down. The prices are challenged. The opposite was we had 10 houses for sale and free sold. Now you got 3 months of inventory. And you're below the 4 to 6 natural and it becomes a seller's market. Prices are starting to go up. We're starting to see multiple offers on houses. So let's look at the month's worth of inventory that we've had since the first of the year. We started at 3.9, went to 3.6 in Feb, 3.8 in March, 4.2 in April, and then 4.3 in May. They're all below. They're all in that seller's market. That's good news. Many experts believe the second half of 2019 will drive a stronger market than we saw in the beginning of the year. And this is great news for homeowners who have put off getting their houses onto the market and are now ready to make a choice. Bottom line, what a difference we've seen over the course of a year. If you're thinking of selling, now could be the time because inventory is on the rise. You don't want to miss out on a window of having low inventory. Let's talk about prices. So we talked about inventory. Inventory's rising a little, but we're in good shape. We've got inventory coming on, but it's not above the normal levels yet. So we're still in a seller's market in most of the price points. You get into the higher ones, it's a little more difficult. And what can you expect year over year price appreciation on your house? That's what this next article is going to talk about it. The price appreciation forecast. Questions continue to come up about where home prices will head throughout the rest of the year, as well as where they may be going over the next few years beyond. Then we've gathered current data from the industry's most reliable resources to help answer the question. The Home Price Expectation Survey, a survey of over 100 markets where real estate experts and economics conducted by Pulsonics Each Corner, and that's a company that does that kind of thing, the Mortgage Bankers Association, and there's a Freddie Mac, the National Association of Realtors, Freddie Mae, and here is what we're seeing. This is the composite of numbers that we're seeing. In 2019, we're looking at possibly as high as 4.1%, and as low as 2.8%, depending which number we look at. So 2018, we got about 3.5%. And if your house was under that 500K level, you probably got more like 6 or 7%. And if your house was over the 500K mark, you really probably got zero to it, went down a little. So it depends where you're at. And I always like to say, it not only depends where you're at price-wise, it depends where you're at geographically. If you're in the western part of Hunterdon County, it's harder to sell your house. Let's pick a town. I'm not picking on it, but let's pick a town like Alexandria. It actually touches the river in a couple of spots. If you're in Alexandria, it's harder to sell a house than if you're in Raritan or Clinton Townships. I'm going to repeat that. If you're in Alexandria, it's harder to sell than if you're in Hunterdon or in Raritan or Clinton Township, because more people want to live closer to New York. And if you're above 500K, it's twice as hard, because not only is it harder to sell it geographically, it's harder to sell it because we don't have that many buyers buying up there. Remember what I said, 80% of our buyers are buying under 500K. So we're looking at somewhere between a high 2 to a really, really low 4 appreciation this year. So let's say it's somewhere in the low 3s, low to mid 3s. The next year, probably not going to be as good as that. It's going to be on the high side around 3.5 and on the low side about 2.8. And in 2021, we're seeing it maybe even a notch lighter around. There's only a couple of forecasts out there, and there are 2.5, 2.6. So, bottom line, every resource sees home prices continue to appreciate, which is great news for the strength of the market. The increase is the steepest throughout the rest of 2019, and prices should continue to rise as we move through the 2020 market and beyond. But what's going to happen? Everything that goes up must come down. And our market over the last 100 months has been in a promising job market, promising economic market, and a promising housing market. And eventually it adjusts. Now, in 2005 to 2008, it took a major adjustment. It adjusted down 30 to 35%, depending on the price point you're in. We're not seeing that kind of an adjustment. We're just seeing a slowdown in growth at some point in time. So where we were getting 5 and 6% 2 years ago, we're seeing 2 and 3% over the next year or two. That may be as far as it slows down. And if that's the case, that's not so bad. We're still going up, unless you're in the upper price points and the further out west locations. But if, in effect, we take an adjustment, and it just means we've slowed down a little, well, then we're in really great shape compared to where we were 10 years ago when the bottom fell out of the market. So, as a buyer, what does this mean to you? Let's talk about the cost of waiting. If you wait to buy a house, interest rates are projected to increase steadily heading into 2020. We're still going to see some decrease in 2019, but then we're going to see it come back up. The higher your interest rate, the more money you will end up paying. Rates are still low right now, and you don't want to wait for them to hit 5% before you start searching for your home. So this is your biggest factor, not only interest rates, but home prices. But interest rates, if you can afford a $500,000 house at 4%, and the interest rate just merely goes, remember I said it's around 3.5 right now, so if it went from a $500,000 house at 3.5 and it merely went to 4.5 by this time next year, you will lose 9% of your buying power. 9% of your buying power on a $500,000 house is 45%, so now you can only afford a 455. At the same time, remember I'm saying we're going to see 3 or 4 price points increasing on houses under 500K. So you're going to only be able, interest-wise, to afford a 455, and at the same time, the house that was 500, right on the edge of where it's going up, is probably going to go up to 520. So now you only can afford a 425. So this powerful 1-2 punch of interest going up and house prices going up drive people to want to buy before it happens. And that's why we have the feeding frenzy that's going on right now. If today's rate and the examples I have here are a little high because the rate went down since it was published just a week ago, I mean, that's how dynamic this market is. But if you bought today's rate at 3.75, and what we're looking at is a house for a $250,000 loan. So it's probably a $300,000 house and you borrow $250,000. At 3.75, you'd pay $1,157 for the house. That's just mortgage payment for the loan. That doesn't add in your taxes. That doesn't add in your homeowners association. It doesn't add in your insurance. But your principal and interest would be $1,157. If it moves to 4, it's $1,193. You're going to pay $36 a month more. If it moves to 4.3 from 3.75, now it's only gone up about a half a point, you're going to pay $1,237. It's going to be $80 a month more. So you can start to see the dynamics here. The longer you wait, and they call it the cost of waiting, the more things are going to cost. So I can tell you as a seller, there couldn't be a better time to be selling your home because the buyers are out. And if you've got a clean home and it's under $500,000, it will probably sell quicker than you can believe. If you've got a clean home in the 500 to 600 range, you're probably going to be reasonably pleased if you price it right and don't get greedy. It will sell and there is a market. You get above 6, we're starting to get challenged. You get above 8, there's almost no market at all. Last month, above 800,000, we had a 33-month supply of houses. 33-month supply of houses is a long wait if you have to sell for a particular reason. And as a result, those people start marking those houses down to sell. Between 6 and 8, we had a 13-month supply. But from 600,000 and down, we had a 5-month supply, which is normal. So if you're a seller, I think you've got to consider there's no time like the present because there will be a point where it stops growing the way it's growing. And if your house is in the 7s or 8s and we start to see prices coming down, it's better to sell it and do what you need to do now than wait for it to come down even more, and there to be less of a buyer's market. There's another article that it just talks about the declining birth rate. So we talked about interest. We talked about prices. Let's talk about people, because without people, we're not going to sell houses. So we need people with money and jobs and credit and need to buy houses with low interest and at reasonable prices. There are more than 3.7 estimated births in 2018. This is the entire country. 3.7 births, down 2% over the year before. And here are some of the ways falling fertility rate may impact Americans in the years ahead. Typically, the birth rates rise with an improved economy, but there are other factors in play. Younger and unmarried women are having fewer babies, and more women are delaying marriage as the start of their careers in college, and dual-income families find it increasingly expensive to have children. Couples may be finding it more difficult to pay their bills when they're holding off having more children until financial situation improves. University of Notre Dame researchers said conception dropped ahead of last of three recessions, starting with the recession of '90s and the 2000s and the Great Recession of 2008. So we're seeing this as a forerunner of a recession. As I said, I think it's going to be more of an adjustment than a recession. Daycare and college tuition continue to climb, so fewer couples are having children. However, static wage growth means that couples are still struggling to make ends meet. So static means it's remaining the same, but I think we're seeing it increase a little, the numbers I've just read. Considered a sobering number of U.S. Department of Agriculture, in 2015, middle-income marriage couple with a kid spent 16% more than a family in 1960, adjusting for inflation. Families shouldn't spend more than about 7% of their income on child care, according to a recommendation by the Department of Health and Human Services. But there's no state in the country where parents can follow that recommendation. 2018 analysis by child care says that parents in the U.S. spent $9 to $9,600 for each child's daycare in 2017, up roughly 7.5% from the year before. It's also more difficult for parents to take a lot of time off from work, especially if they're not being paid, although I'm starting to see some very liberal laws in that department. Only the District of Columbia and five states, California, New Jersey, Rhode Island, New York, and Washington, have paid family leave. Those are the liberal programs I'm talking about. I don't know how we afford to do that, to be honest with you. Nobody did that when I had kids. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying nobody did it. Assistant Director of Savings Research for Boston College, retirement research said robust birth rates were important for the future health of the Social Security funds. So think about it. We have people like me collecting Social Security, and people like the millennials, of which there are less of, aren't putting as much money in. So I, in my retirement years, nearing my retirement years anyway, don't see any problem for my generation. But we do see the funding being an issue going forward. With more baby boomers drawing Social Security checks and living longer, the funds are already under pressure. 2019 Social Security Trustee Report released last month said 80% of the scheduled benefits payable by 2035. At the end of last year, almost 63 million received $994 billion in Social Security. The year earlier, 62 million people received $946 billion. So it went up $30 billion just in 1 year. The trustee went up $30 billion in 1 year while we were putting less in at the bottom end. Knowledge is the future. The two funds may depend on things like the size of the workforce, the number of recipients, and how much they are getting. Immigration, marriage, divorce rates, and mortgage rates also play a part. There may also be some upside. Individuals without children say they felt the most satisfied in the relationship, according to a 2014 study. That may be at the point the question was asked. But if they answered that same question through the life of their relationship, I think the answer would be different. Because I think, yes, it's easy to have a Lexus, and it's easy to have vacations. It's easy not to have children, a lot easier than it used to be. So they're satisfied. But what happens in the later years of your life? Are you going to be as satisfied then? It's a rhetorical question. 5,000 people over a two-year period, ranging in age, sexual orientation, and background, perhaps they had more quality time to spend with one another. I can agree with that. Children do take a lot of money. Children do take a lot of time. This wasn't the case for everyone, however. Men, women, and children said they were happy even if the relationship broke down. Plus, a separate study from researchers at Dartmouth College provided more context. It found that adults with kids don't have higher happiness scores, but their satisfaction rose when researchers adjusted it for those who didn't experience difficulty in paying their bills. So, what they're saying is adults with kids, without kids, adults with kids didn't have higher happiness, but if they could afford what they were doing, and I think that's not the case in the majority, if they could afford what having children cost, well, then they did have higher satisfaction. So it's a really qualified satisfaction level. Are you satisfied? Do you have enough money to pay your bills at the end of the month? Yes. Are you satisfied? Yes. Do you not have enough money at the end of the month to pay your bills? Yes. Are you satisfied? No. And you're not satisfied of a lot of things, including your children. Two myths holding back home buyers. This is a whole subject matter, but you really need three or four things in order to buy a house. You need a job. It can't be a minimum wage job because we just, if you make a minimum wage, you're going to make $30,000 a year, and at $30,000 a year, you can't buy a $750 a month mortgage, and we don't have houses that mortgage for $750 or apartments that rent. So if you have a job, you need a job that's probably paying, and yes, if you earn $50,000, you can afford $1,250 mortgage payment. That's interest, principal, taxes, and your homeowner's fee. If, in effect, a couple each earns $50,000, then they can earn $2,500. And that's about a reasonable figure. A first-time buyer buys a $250,000 house. They put 10% down, so they have a $225,000 mortgage, $5 a thousand. That's going to bring you around $1,100 a month. Then you got to pay your taxes. Easy $400 a month, maybe $500. So now you're at $1,600, $1,700. Homeowners Association, I haven't seen anything under $300 in a while. Add in some insurance, add in some maintenance, and you're easily over $2,000. But myth one, I need 20% down payment. No, we can get your mortgage with 3% down payment. 3% conventional, 3.5%. And Freddie Mac, a government-backed mortgage. Or if you qualify and buy a house in a certain area, you can get in with zero down, although you'd pay more money up front. I need a 780 FICO score. No, you don't. It would be nice because you're going to get a better rate, but a 780 FICO score is almost perfect. If you're above 700, you're in good shape. We can get you a mortgage. You're probably going to pay more money than if somebody with a 780, but you still have mortgage money available to you. And then another myth is that so you don't really need to save 20%. It's really hard to save 20%. You do need to save 3%. And you need to save another 3% for closing costs. So in order to buy a $250,000 house, 3% of 200 is 6, so 250 is like 7,500 in order to close, if I'm dividing right. You need 6%, 3% down, 3% to close. Then you need some money once you've closed. I mean, you got to move, you got to paint, you got to, you know, so there's a little, you need some money, but it's not as much as you think. So that's the first myth. You need a job, and that job has to pay a certain amount of money. And you have to be in that job of upwardly progress for amount of time. So let's say you're in a job that pays $40,000 a year. You started 5 years ago at 30. You're now earning 40. You can see that in number five, you might be making 50. There's plenty of those jobs available. You're in pretty good shape. There's only so much you can buy with it, but you're in pretty good shape. You have credit, and your credit's 710, 720. You're in pretty good shape. And the last thing that they look at, your job, your earning capability, your savings, you need some assets, as I said, is your proportion of your output credit-wise to your gross income. And if you, including the mortgage that you're applying for, are going to be above 45% of your gross income, you're probably not going to get the mortgage. Now, what goes into that? There's a front end, and that's a 30%, and there's a back end. The front end is just how much of what I earn can I put into a mortgage, and that's 30%. So let's say you make $10,000 a month. $3,000 of it can be your mortgage payment, including interest, taxes, homeowners, whatever expenses. But you also have a car. You also have some student debt. You also have a credit card or two. And that adds up to another $1,500. Well, now you have a 45% ratio. That's called the back-end ratio. Now it's getting a little close. We can still make that happen if your credit is excellent and you have some assets, but you're getting a little close. So I'm telling you, you need to talk to a credit advisor. And people, the biggest question I get asked is, what about my student debt? What does that mean? That's just another loan. If you owe $30,000, you're probably paying $300 a month on that $30,000, and that goes into those figures. It's a loan you have to pay back. And one of the biggest issues people have when they go to apply for a mortgage is that they've defaulted on student debt. And I see parents get screwed up because their kids defaulted on student debt. So what you've got to do is you've got to go talk to a mortgage counselor. And that mortgage counselor will sit with you and will help you understand what you have. So need a job. You need some assets cash-wise. You need a good credit score. And you need to be earning enough money in order to do what you're looking to do. And even before you talk to a realtor, you need to talk to a mortgage person. But most of the time, you want to go look at a house or two and see what you can buy. And I would be more than happy to show you a house or two. Before we look at the third and fourth one, though, you're going to sit and talk to a mortgage person, because it doesn't make sense to look at $400,000 houses if you can only afford a $200,000 house. But we can find that out together. And we can find it out very painlessly. You can almost figure it out on paper, but we have people to help. My name is Joe Peters, and I'm going to play my commercial one more time. I'll be back next week with Al War, and we're going to get into what's rocking in Hunterdon County. Thank you for tuning in.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So once again, Joe Peters, if you'd like to talk to me, 908-238-0118. If I'm not already talking to somebody else, I will probably answer the phone. Don't be surprised. I'm easy to talk to. I'm not pushy, and I will help you achieve your goals and dreams. I know a lot of resources. I've been doing this for a long time. Secondly, my site, jpeters.com, that's my first initial J and my last name, P-E-T-E-R-S.com, has a wealth of information. All the articles I read you are blog post articles. My newsletter is all out there on the tab that says blog. There's a first-time buyer's page. There's a home buyer's page. There's a home seller's page. There's a 55-plus page. There's more information there than you can shake a stick at. So take a look. Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you again next week.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Mark Esper is the nation's new defense secretary. He was easily confirmed by the Senate today in a 90-8 vote. Esper is an Army vet and was secretary of the Army when President Trump tapped him to run the Pentagon. He's the first Senate-confirmed defense chief since Secretary Mattis resigned late last year. The Senate passes a bill extending funding for the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund.
The yeas are 97, the nays are 2. The bill is passed.
Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn announcing the final vote. The bill will now head to President Trump's desk, where he's expected to sign the measure. And the Royal Canadian Mounted Police say a pair of missing teenagers, once thought to be in harm's way, are now suspects after a double murder in British Columbia and a third suspicious death. 18-year-old Briar Schmegelski and 19-year-old Cam McLeod are both considered armed and dangerous. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaruth, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FordhamResources.com. That's Fordham, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Ford Motor Company is facing a $1 billion lawsuit over allegations of falsifying fuel economy tests. The complaint is seeking damages on behalf of drivers of 2018 and 2019 F-150 pickups, claiming that drivers may be spending an extra $2,000 on fuel. The world's largest general aviation gathering got underway in Oshkosh, Wisconsin on Monday. The 67th Annual Experimental Aircraft Association's fly-in continues through Sunday. Retired Air Force Jerry Jive Kirby is taking part.